Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Two managers widely regarded as the best face each other in the Premier League this weekend. Manchester City and Pep Guardiola taking on Liverpool led by Jurgen Klopp. Who is the better manager? Are they just the right fit for their respective clubs? Meanwhile, Aston Villa boss Unai Emery, with multiple European trophies on his CV, takes on Graham Potter, who got the Chelsea job following his work at Brighton. How would you compare those two? Could you compare those two? Is it on trophies? Is it on overachievement? Or is it something else? I'm Mark Chapman. This is the Athletic Football Podcast.
When I win a game, and after I'm a failure when you lose a game. So I'm not a genius, honestly.
For sure, the Premier League is one of the most difficult leagues in the world because 5, 6, 7 clubs can be the champion, and at the end only one is the champion, and all the other are disappointed, live in the middle of a disaster or something.
You can't be that person that's talking about process and a journey and not getting enough results in the short term. So it's just a balance, but it has been all my career, it's always the same. You have to just take the steps in the right way, be yourself. Whatever the expectations are from outside, I can't control those.
I want to improve here, and I want to help with my experiences as a coach. And in my experiences, I think in Spain, in French, in Premier League, and I play it against a lot of teams in the world. My dream is to win a trophy with Aston Villa. It's my personal challenge.
So joining us for this one, The Athletic's Ollie Kay and Tim Spears. Tim, let me start with you. What makes a good manager?
Well, I mean, you say manager. It's head coach, really, you know, by its very nature. I think that's the point, really, that it's changed so much in recent years. I was at Spurs v Milan recently, and with Jack Pitbrook and James Horncastle, and we all got very excited at halftime because we saw Steve Cooper in attendance. The subject of Conte's future was rife at the time, and Steve Cooper was reportedly on a short or long list to replace him. And we all got very excited. It took us a good few minutes, Mark, to realise that Spurs were playing Nottingham Forest that weekend, and Cooper was actually just scouting his next opposition. But that's so rare these days. And it's just one example of how, you know, a manager's or head coach's job has really changed. You know, you don't get them scouting players in person at all. They're much less involved in the recruitment process or contract negotiations. You know, that just doesn't happen anymore. Some of them will have absolutely nothing to do with the under-23s or the academy setup. Again, that was very different sort of 10, 15 years ago. Our perception hasn't changed in terms of when results go wrong, it's still all their fault and nobody else's, which I think is something that as a game, we sort of have to change that over time. In answer to your question, I think the basic principles do still remain in terms of obviously leadership, obviously, you know, communication, intelligence, trust, tactical astuteness. A lot of things they don't do anymore. And then there are some things that they have to do more now, which is in terms of managing personalities and egos of players who earn up to £20 million a year. You know, that's something that's changed as well. So, but those basic principles still remain, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember doing, I say this quite often, Ollie, talking to Sean Dyche and spending time with Sean Dyche when he was still at Burnley, and Dyche saying to me, I am basically in charge of 25 chief executives of their own companies, which even though therefore we assume that the majority of the modern day managers are coaches, that there is still that element to it as well. There is still a management element.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it can be managing up, managing down, but as much as we as fans and as journalists probably judge managers or coaches on what they do in the transfer market, what they visibly do on the touchline in terms of in-game management, substitutions, picking the right lineup, etc. Even the way they behave on the touchline. An awful lot of it is about managing the environment that they are in charge of. And generally, I mean, one thing that comes out about when managers leave, you hear about a negative mood, you hear about toxic, you hear about, you know, relationships with players breaking down, losing the dressing room, all of that. And I think it shows that a huge amount of that job is about how you manage that environment, how you keep, you know, 20 to 25 first team squad players all pulling in the same direction, how you rotate the squad, how you make every day at training fun, how you make people, you know, fun but serious, and how you can kind of improve a team or keep them at a high level week in, week out, while by keeping the mood high, keeping the professionalism focused, morale high. I think an awful lot of it is about management even before you get to the coaching part. You can be the best coach in the world, and if you can't manage people and manage players, you're struggling. I mean, people used to talk about Andre Villas-Boas being technically a brilliant coach, but he went to Chelsea and found that, you know, he could not manage that dressing room at all. I don't think he was ever a particularly good, you know, certainly in those early days of his career, post Porto, Chelsea and at Tottenham, I don't think he was ever a particularly good sort of people person. And I think you've got to be that as well as a technically brilliant coach.
Although from the outside looking in at Guardiola and Klopp, Ollie, you would say that whilst they're both elite coaches, you'd say that Klopp strikes you as more of a people person than Guardiola, wouldn't you?
I would. Klopp seems exceptional in that regard in terms of being the kind of guy who brings the positive energy, but brings the, you know, has everybody sort of ready to run through brick walls for him. I interviewed Klopp when he was at Dortmund and came out of that interview after about an hour with him thinking, God, I just feel totally energized by an hour in his company. And if he does that for overweight, middle-aged journalists...
had it been a long time since you previously felt energized, Ollie?
I'm only a few years old. it was unique, the sort of charisma and energy that he had. He was remarkable. And I can... You know, when you look at Liverpool, how low the mood was when he went there, and I just felt immediately, well, I don't know whether he's going to win the league or win a trophy, but he will just transform and energise and illuminate that club, which he did sort of almost overnight, very, very quickly. The Guardiola, yeah, he's more of a technocrat, but then if you look at, and you know, he can sometimes come across as a bit of an oddball in some ways in his press conference. He has a strange manner in the way he doesn't have sort of Klopp's charm, which Klopp can turn on a certain charm for the cameras, not always there, certainly. But Klopp has that sort of charisma. Guardiola has a sort of different energy about him. But then you watch the, you know, the All or Nothing series, you know, where all the behind the scenes things, dressing room and meeting rooms at City. And although, you know, he talks at whatever, 200 words a minute, and it's all very, very frantic, but you can see it's very inspirational as well. And so I think although his strengths are perhaps different to Klopp's, I think they both have that incredibly positive energy. Whereas some great managers of the past, you can look at them and think, oh, you know, Del Bosque didn't really seem like a terribly energetic guy. No. Carlo Ancelotti doesn't. Zidane doesn't. Well, Paisley certainly did.
No, but interestingly, the majority of the ones that you mentioned, or that Ollie mentioned there, Tim, maybe not Zidane, but they have it's like a father figure role, isn't it? It's like a father figure role, or grandfather figure role, or a teacher role. I mean, that's what you're also looking for in all of this. And Guardiola may be more teacher, and Klopp may be more father-like.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing, you know. So it's almost, you've got to appoint the right style of manager for the club at that particular time, where that club is in its development. Or the Conte one, I guess, is something we're all thinking of at the moment. But that was never going to work, in my opinion, you know, despite the fact that he's very successful, and Spurs, within the right ingredients, can be very successful as well. but they were so different for what each other needed at the time. It doesn't make Conte any less successful of a manager. I'm sure he'll go on and do very well elsewhere. And people will call it the Spurs curse or whatever. But when you've got a club like Spurs with its average age of signings of 23 and looking to the long term, and then you've got Conte, who's very good in certain circumstances. You know, he can set a team up brilliantly with a stingy defence, and he's a motivator, and he can win you a title. You know, through consistency, the same formation and repetition. You know, not so great in the cups, and that's quite a short term approach at a high level club. So, you know, for Spurs to go and appoint someone like that, you've got an awful lot of young players who need nurturing, and they're shopping in a different market to the other clubs in the Big Six. I think that's a really good example of the right manager for the wrong club. That there are very different genres of manager that are out there, but it's supporting the right genre for what your club needs at that time.
The point about at that time is all important. I mean, you could look at, people could say Conte wasn't the right fit for Tottenham because Tottenham never win anything. I think if Conte, say Pochettino had left in 2018 or 2019, summer of 2019, and Conte had gone there then, when I think the club was, in a better state, less of a sort of rebuilding job needed at that time, I think maybe he would have found it more to his liking, whereas they've fallen away a bit over the past few years. If Conte had gone into Chelsea in the summer of 2019 when Frank Lampard did, and when all the emphasis was on rebuilding, new players, transfer embargo, etc., I think Conte would have found Chelsea an awful lot less to his liking than he did when he went there in 2016. Not that he underachieved at Chelsea by any means. I mean, he did brilliantly because they'd been mid-table the previous season. But that was a really experienced core group of players who'd won the league 12 months before he came in. So I think Conte is brilliant, possibly even unrivaled in that situation. You look at how he hit the ground running in the Premier League. More than Klopp, more than even Guardiola.
It sounds so obvious, doesn't it? I mean, when you sit here and discuss it, that you have to get the right man at the right time for your club, and Klopp was most definitely the right man at the right time for Liverpool. I mean, if ever there was a perfect fit, it was that. And Manchester City had courted Guardiola for many years before they eventually put him in position, but. You look at the majority of the big clubs around Europe, Tim, and it is the same names in the frame for those big jobs, whether they'd be suitable or not. I mean, that's the bizarre thing, isn't it? You know, you can guarantee that if managerial vacancies come up for Paris Saint-Germain and Real Madrid at the same time, then similar names will be in the frame, despite the fact they might need very different things.
Yeah, you're right. Patience is not out there to take a chance on younger, less proven managers. A lot of these things come in cycles as well. You know, when you've got one manager who's just been sacked, who maybe, training was very laborious and sort of no days off and, played the same players every week and stuck with underperforming players. And then the next guy comes in and makes training fun and gives them a few days off and gets rid of the bad apple who's been stinking the place out. You know, there are very sort of quick fixes that can easily sort of get you on, a roll and a momentum, and then you go with it. Certainly saw that, at Wolves recently, where Bruno Lage was daily meetings, sometimes two or three times a day in a big meeting room that he installed with like rows of seats and like PowerPoint presentations and stuff. Well, the players loved it at first because they were getting so much detail, but then when results start to turn, they're like, God, this is tedious. So the next guy comes in, gets rid of that, and suddenly, do you know what I mean? Everything's better again, and you can apply that to tactics and selection and all sorts, really. Just the feel of the place, and I guess that's what we mean about right guy at the right time as well.
We mentioned Guardiola and how he's been the perfect fit for City, and he came in at the perfect time. But I actually think if he had gone into Manchester City, even 5 years earlier, 6 years earlier, had he taken over from Mancini or even from Mark Hughes, I think he would have led City to far greater success in those years than Mancini and Pellegrini did. No, I wouldn't underestimate what they did, but I just think he is such an outstanding coach. You can tell, you can see when his teams play that they are exceptionally well coached. One of the accusations these days is that they almost look like they've been overcoached. They've got all these fair players, but there's not all that much spontaneity as they win 6-0 and 7-0. I do think he's utterly outstanding. And when people say, well, could he do it with Stoke? Could he do it with West Brom? Well, whatever. Could he do it with Tranmere? Nobody's suggesting he would win the Premier League with those teams. But, you know, the reason we'll never find out is because he is so outstanding that he will never be taking jobs sort of below the elite level. Why would he? Whoever does, who...
Can you understand the question, though?
I can understand the question, but I do think it's kind of irrelevant because he operates at such a high level that he will always be at such a high level. It's like, you know, asking whether a Hollywood producer would be able to, you know, produce an amateur dramatics play at, you know, your local theatre. He is so utterly brilliant. And I think, you know, he had a season in charge of Barcelona B, and led them to their first promotion in years. Had a brilliant record there, was developing young players. That's why he got the senior job. I think he's just so utterly outstanding. And if he did put, let's say a club such as Swansea that plays, yeah, that is renowned for playing position football in the Championship. They've got really good coach in Russell Martin, really highly regarded. But I've no doubt if you put Guardiola in charge of that team, he would take them to a much higher level in terms of results, might get them promoted, or might then put them in a solid position in the Premier League. A lot of his extreme achievements in terms of the trophies, in terms of points tallies, etc., are a reflection of working with truly elite players. But I do have little doubt that if you put him in charge of a group of players, or gave him a year to build a squad of players on a budget that could play his type of football, he would deliver better results than 99.9%.
You then flip it the other way around, though, don't you, Tim? And then questions are immediately asked when managers take a step up. We're seeing it with Graham Potter at the moment. You could argue the same thing happened to Nuno when he went to Tottenham. Certainly David Moyes at Manchester United to go way back. Things get flipped the other way, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, certainly in Nuno's example, you know, he really struggled to manage top-level players who he struggled to sort of command their respect and exert his authority and couldn't relate to them on their phones all the time. And he was just like, yeah, again, just couldn't seem to manage them, basically. I think he was a bit sort of bereft at what top-level players are actually sort of like and how you can struggle to forge that connection with them. And that connection is so important. And you know, with the fans as well, and maybe it's a flippant thing to say, but you know, I really do believe there's something in there, and Potter's struggling to create that connection at the moment, or he has anyway. It's not always about results. If the fans aren't having you know, you won't last. Once you go through a tough spell, I remember in 2016-17, Wolves had two managers who both failed and both had half a season, and one is remembered far more fondly than the other. They were Walter Zenger and Paul Lambert, who literally just couldn't be any more different. You know, I know them both quite well and still speak to them occasionally, and they're extremely different characters. You know, Zenger was just mental. Like, honestly, I'd tell that to his face. He's crazy. He was like an extrovert who would jump up and down and be a real character on the touchline, but he was also quite endearing. And Lambert was much more sort of dignified. And he moaned a bit, and he actually moaned about Zenger, and I think fans were like, well, you know, you're not doing much better yourself, mate, so maybe keep it shut. And they both had very similar results. Zenger was sacked in 18th and Lambert was sacked in 15th. But the popularity amongst them was so different. Zenger was much more likable. And I remember speaking to Nuno not long after he'd been appointed at Wolves, and he was sort of concerned that with the new style of possession-based football he was enlisting, the Wolves fans might not have him, and that if he was taking a while to sort of generate results, it might increase the pressure early on, and that's something he was sort of concerned about. And I remember explaining to him the Zenger-Lambert sort of differences in popularity, despite Zenger being a vastly inferior manager, in my opinion, and that after Zenger's fourth game in charge, he was on his knees in front of the away end at St Andrews, bowing down to the fans, and they loved him for it. And I remember saying to Nuno, a very simple gesture, like going on the pitch at full time and clapping the fans, really goes a long way, and that can really hold you in good stead. And he was known for being sort of cold and emotionless at Porto at his previous job, and he was like, I've never really done that, to be honest. But he sort of taught himself and forced himself to do it. That evolved into Klopp-style fist bumps. And yes, results went very well, but I do think that's a part of it, because it gives you breathing room. and a bit of time to do what you want to do?
I don't think, or not clubs, but people who make these appointments think about that enough, Ollie, to be honest with you. And you sort of look at maybe a list of who could be linked with a job and you think, well, if you go with person X, the fans are going to be on your back before you've even... I mean, look at Nathan Jones at Southampton, you know? Actually, look at Ralph Hasenhüttl when he took over at Southampton, immediately connected with the fans off the back of Mark Hughes. You could argue Unai Emery's connected with the Villa fans perfectly. It was exactly what Villa needed and what the fans wanted and so on and so forth. It's not necessarily about the individual. It's about the actual individual and the relationship with the club.
The one that sprung to mind as you were saying that just now, Mark, was Rafa Benitez at Everton, where people within the Everton hierarchy, Marcel Brands famously warned that this isn't going to work. I don't think it was just about the Liverpool connections, but I think it was sort of personality and character and background and so on. And Benitez went to Everton, look, ultra professional, works incredibly hard for his club, you know, certainly had no Liverpool allegiance when he was managing Everton. But the baggage of, I mean, look, he was going into a club that was pretty much doomed to struggle that season. They'd not been able to spend anything really in the summer. The mood was pretty negative. I think it would have been the case almost whoever had gone in. And I shouldn't tell you, you know, they didn't need somebody to organise, which is what Benitez is incredibly good at. They needed someone to energise the club. The way, for example, David Moyes did that brilliantly when he went there in 2002. But Benitez went there and seemed... seemed sort of self-conscious of his body language, seemed to be very aware of the sort of negativity around or towards him. I don't think he did anything out of turn in terms of his relation, you know, the way he interacted with the fans. I don't think the fans could be blamed for anything. I think the fans tried to be as open-minded as possible, but results after a good start went very, very bad, and inevitably came to the point where with things going badly behind the scenes as well, he was sacked. And I think one of the things they looked for in his successor, Lampard, was somebody that would connect with the fans, and somebody that would energise the place and lift it. And I think it didn't last long for Lampard, but I think he did that part very well. I don't think Everton would have stayed up without recreating that connection with the fans, even if it proved to be a very short-term thing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It also feels like image has become such an important thing, like literally to the extent of what they may wear and then how they're perceived. So, You know, you look at Unai Emery and his record, and you may not want to talk about this, Tim, particularly from with a Wolves hat on, but you look at Unai Emery and what he has done at Villa, and indeed what he has done at other clubs as well, Sevilla and Villarreal. And yet, certainly in this country, because of his image, I would argue, he doesn't get anywhere near the attention and the respect that he probably should do.
Yeah, you're right. And that comes from, you know, his spell at Arsenal. And, you know, he was a figure of fun on Twitter. And, you know, clubs do look at this stuff. I think it's insane. But you do get chairman on Twitter judging the reaction of replies to club tweets, which is bonkers. Because, I mean, I completely ignore it. I think there's a lot of it's irrelevant. And yet you've got people running football clubs who put a lot of sway into that sort of public mood. And, yeah, you're absolutely right about appearance and being the face of it and the media game. I remember Arsenal turning their nose up at Nuno because, you know, his media relations were absolutely abysmal. And they were like, he can't be the face of this global brand. Because that's what it is as well. It's not just 11 players on a pitch. They have got to answer to everything. Again, I remember Conte moaning a lot recently about how he has to answer for absolutely everything at the club, be that decisions that Levy makes or decisions that Fabio Paratici makes. And he was like, you know, in Italy, directors of football hold press conferences and have to speak at certain clubs before and after games. But here, that's very different. You know, they can hide.
I would definitely bring that in here.
Definitely, 100%.
I would definitely bring that in here to help, particularly to help these guys who are sometimes doing. I would reckon 15 interviews a week. Some of them, the top ones, when you take in press conferences, post match, TV, radio, newspapers. I mean, it's bloody stupid.
I'm not sure the general public has any idea of the media demands that are put on head coaches,
foreign broadcasters.
Foreign broadcasters before and after every game, be that an EFL Cup tie against Grimsby or a Champions League tie, yeah, written press, radios, TV, club media, and it's all on one man. It's insane, you know. It's not a small part of the job, and it's something you've got to be good at. I think that's never going to change. I don't think anytime soon, but it's certainly something that should. I agree, Mark.
The cult of a manager in English football is enormous. You could say it dates back to, you know, Mourinho and Ferguson and Wenger and that sort of very visual Premier League years. But, you know, even you go back to the 60s and 70s, and there's a great focus on Shankly and Busby and Clough and Malcolm Allison and all these great managers, Bill Nicholson, Bertie Mee. And it's there's always been an intense focus.
But they only had to talk to, like, they didn't do press conferences, did they? They did a post-match interview they probably didn't do pre-match interviews, actually. They'd do a quick post-match interview on the pitch, wouldn't they? And then a little huddle with some journalists, sometimes on the bus on the way back with a pint.
Oh, yeah, in the pub, yeah.
The glory days. But the serious point is, for all it was, Malcolm Allison or Clough or whatever, the demands on them were by no means the same.
When Eddie Howe went to Newcastle, and even when he was going to go to Celtic in the summer of 2021, it was, there was a lot of talk of whether the sort of size of the club and the sort of goldfish bowl aspect of both of those clubs would be what made it, you know, a struggle for him, and whether sort of personality wise he was able to be that sort of beacon, talisman type figure that those particular clubs with those particular fan bases would desperately need him to be. I remember Jamie Carragher once saying to me about Roy Hodgson, you know, his tactics weren't that different to Rafa Benitez at Liverpool, but personality-wise, he was just completely wrong for Liverpool. He never seemed to realise that everything he said would be scrutinised by a fan base that was sceptical about it. Go back to Eddie Howe. I think probably been a concern that Everton had about him at one stage where they were thinking about him. Arsenal had about him at one stage where they were thinking about him, thinking, you know, is he big enough personality-wise? Tottenham as well. Is he big enough personality-wise to be able to be the sort of voice of this club, facing this club? I think it's shown at Newcastle he definitely is. And he's had to ask, you know, he's been faced with some very, very, very uncomfortable questions, rightly, about that regime. And nobody else at the club has been able to take the heat off him in that regard. I don't think he's answered those questions adequately, but I think maybe the best thing for Newcastle is if he sort of ducks them slightly, as unsatisfying as it might be for the rest of the media. And I think he's shown he has got the personality to handle that. Whether he's got enough to take Newcastle the extra mile and then be the manager that leads them to trophies or to advanced stages in the knockout stages or the Champions League or challenging for the league or whatever, I don't know. But I think he's shown he is a manager capable of managing a big and very ambitious club as well as a small one.
Which is really interesting on a final point. And it kind of brings us back to Tottenham. But it also brings us to cyclical things and fashion and being in the moment and so on and so forth. Eddie Howe at Newcastle, Tim, appears to be forgotten because of Graham Potter at Chelsea in any discussion about who a new manager at Tottenham might be. Right? Yeah. So Graham Potter struggles at Chelsea, even though it's a completely different situation to the one that Tottenham are in, is seen as, oh, would they really look at De Zerbi or Thomas Frank or Marco Silva, right? Because promoting from within the Premier League, i.e. going up the supposed chain, well, it's not really working for Chelsea and Graham Potter at the moment, so is that a risk? Ignoring the fact his end at Bournemouth wasn't great, was it? That seems to be doing a very good job at Newcastle. It's amazing how the debate is framed in the moment.
It always comes back to Tottenham, doesn't it, Mark?
It does.
I'd love to know if chairman and owners have these discussions as well. Because you're right, that's how it's framed and that's the narrative, you know, sort of media-wise and among supporters. I genuinely do not know why Tottenham would not go for a manager. Well, like many you've just mentioned there. I was talking to someone before Spurs-Wolves recently and they said Lopetegui would be a great fit for Spurs. He's managed at the top level. He's won trophies. He's tactically very astute. He's very personable. He's been very successful. You know, why on earth would Tottenham not hire him? But I guess because of his failures at Real Madrid, or, you know, he's a little bit older. Whereas actually he'd be a very, very good fit. I mean, really, we should get Daniel Levy on to ask why. But that comes back to a wider point about never hearing about, you know, the accountability or the reasoning behind these decisions, because they're the ones that make them.
I think unless somebody's an A-list manager, people always want to find reasons why this isn't a good idea. And sometimes even when somebody is an A-list manager, like, you know, there were question marks about Mourinho and Conte when they went to Tottenham about whether it was the right fit. There seems to be caveats for praise for so many managers. I've even heard people sort of, you know, I've highlighted the difference between what Arteta has done at Arsenal and what Conte did at Tottenham. One wanted to sort of do everything within 12, 18 months. The other wanted to build and take two steps back to take five steps forward, which is what they've done, really. Even now, you'll get people say, well, the only thing that's changed with Arsenal is that they've started spending money on Zinchenko and Jesus and Partey. And you think, God, have you looked at the way they play? Have you looked at how well coached they are? Have you looked at the mood, the change in mood, the change in personality in that team? And that, like Klopp's Liverpool of when they were on the up 4 or 5 years ago, exceptionally well coached and well managed team. And to be, you know, to be that, of course you have to be a good manager and coach.
And that brings us full circle. So we will leave it there. Tim, Ollie, thank you both. You can subscribe to The Athletic now for just £1 a month for 12 months by going to theathletic.com/footballpod. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.